Hello and welcome to another edition of your Lakers Nation podcast. Jabari Davis back here with you, and I'll be joined by Jameson Welsh and Jordan Buscarini for the bulk of the episode. But I'll also be catching up with LakersNation.com's Corey Hansford and Trevor Lane a bit later for this week's roundtable discussion. We'll just jump right into it. The team continues to struggle, you know, in terms of overall success, but I actually may be in the minority of folks that kind of sees, or at least still see, some of the positives from what I, you know, really, you know, I fully expected it to be a difficult, you know, a difficult season, not necessarily, you know, jumping out the gates, you know, 1-100, but, you know, we knew the team was in transition, you know, so, you know, some of this was to be expected. Last week, Jameson asked if Kobe, you know, or obviously if Kobe Bryant might actually still be slowed or hurt. And obviously at this stage, it's clear that was the case, and that is the case. We'll get to the rest of the team in a second here, but do either of you feel that this might simply be how the final days look for Bryant? And, you know, we'll all just have to kind of accept whatever we get from him this year.
Unfortunately, I believe it's going to be the case just because of the age and the mileage. It's like an older car. You know, we have an older car with a lot of issues. It's going to have something come up, you know, often. And with Kobe, his body is like an older car. Unfortunately, he tweaked, had a calf injury in preseason, back injury, and those things flare up when you're playing basketball, because as we've known, that there's not a lot of guys. I don't know if there's any, you know, 20-season guys shooting guard. There's just not. So it's a tough situation for everyone involved, tough for the team, tough for Kobe himself. But unfortunately, this is kind of what we're going to be seeing, because the more he actually plays, the higher the risk that he gets hurt going forward, because the body just isn't built to play 20 seasons on the perimeter. It's just not.
The difficult thing here is there's two entities that you can never doubt, okay? And Kobe Bryant is one of the guys that, for as long as I've been covering NBA basketball, going on 6 years now, that's the one guy that you never doubt. And that's from being a lifelong Laker and Kobe Bryant fan as well. That was the one guy that thrived on doubt. Or you're going to doubt Kobe Bryant, you're going to see a different beast. So it's hard to doubt Kobe. Yet at the same time, Father Time, he's undefeated for a reason. It just happens. And Jameson brings it up, 20 years now. The body isn't necessarily built to play on the perimeter. Unfortunately, Kobe has been in a situation the last three seasons where you've had to rely on him to the extent to where he put even more miles on his body. Even last year, the usage rate of Kobe was through the roof because you had to rely on him. He's not in a situation, and I've done this on my show throughout the week. I made the comparison to Tim Duncan. He's not in a situation to where Tim Duncan, the weight for Tim Duncan is a hell of a lot lighter than it is for Kobe Bryant, and it has been for a very long time. He's had a core there that has allowed him to age and adjust in a way that Kobe hasn't necessarily had that luxury. So, yes, it's catching up with him. I don't think Kobe's ever going to be 100%. I don't know when the last time Kobe was 100% healthy to begin with. This isn't something that just happened the last 3 or 4 years. Kobe has not been healthy for a very long time, 100% healthy, and I'm sure he would be the one to admit that. If it was the wrist injury, if we're talking knees, if we're talking shoulders, he hasn't been healthy for quite some time. But I will say this, when I watch Kobe play, the Achilles injury, which hasn't really, I mean, I know we talk about three consecutive season-ending injuries, but I don't know that we've put enough emphasis as of late on the Achilles injury. He does not have lift on his jump shot anymore. That's apparent. Kobe actually is shooting, I believe, 43% inside the perimeter. He's shooting 20% from downtown. That's why Kobe's shooting 32% on the season. He doesn't have the lift. And the easiest shot in the game, you're talking about a face-up wing three. The easiest shot to get off in the game, and we've seen Kobe put up a lot of shots from that particular spot. He's not going to be healthy anymore. I mean, it's just a fact. The injuries have taken a toll on an old body, and that's a bad combination.
Terrible combination. I mean, you know, look, there's some folks, and, you know, look, on Twitter, you know, the jokes are always going to fly. You know, obviously there's, you know, there's some folks that are kind of reveling in, the, you know, like, you know, in his struggles. Obviously, you're in a lot of cases, I won't say obviously, but in a lot of cases, you know, they're fans of individuals, or excuse me, fans of teams that, you know, obviously, you know, that he's had a lot of success against, you know, over the years. But at this stage, you know, look, I'm sorry, we have to just call a spade a spade. It's not even a matter of, like, you know, whether we'll see him healthy or not. This is kind of what it is. Like, there may be some good nights here and there, but, you know, Jameson broke it down at the beginning. At one point, it's the calf, then it's the back. You know, the backbone's connected to the knee bone. And, you know, when you get to a certain age, the body simply will not recover. You know, it just doesn't. You know, you can feel okay, and then out of nowhere, I hate to age myself here, but look, I can tell you right now, there are days where I feel pretty good, and there are days where I wake up and I say, oh, okay, I shouldn't have sneezed that way. It just happens. Like I said, as both of you guys mentioned, 20 years in the league, you know, especially for a guard, especially when you have taken kind of the pounding and put all of the mileage and, you know, it all, and had all of that usage along the way, we're seeing the evidence of it. Transitioning to the rest of the team, now that a bit more information is kind of starting to trickle out about the reasons behind the, the coaching staff's reluctance to turn the keys over to D'Angelo Russell, entirely. And for those that haven't heard, heard of the reports or the rumblings, but basically the team or the coaching staff, you know, gets the feeling that D'Angelo Russell has a quote-unquote Hollywood attitude. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but actually I'll just ask, does knowing that aspect of it, does it change either of your opinions on this strategy?
Not necessarily, because at the end of the day, it's, can you play or can you not? Are you performing on the court or not? So to me, whatever his personality may be, whatever is going on outside of the court, I don't think that it should have an issue with what's going on the court. I think what's going on more on the court should be, you should be coaching to the strengths of your second, your number two pick. I think that's the key. I think you want to be coaching to the strength of your young players, not implementing your system and forcing the young players to, go into that. I think that's been the biggest issue thus far. Even though you've had other players play relatively well, you want to make sure everyone's on the same page. And right now, there's too many times there's so much confusion on the offensive end, especially later in games when you see different breakdowns and just too much isolation basketball. You'd like to see everyone on the same page. You'd like to see the coach make tweaks to his system. That's what good coaches do. They make tweaks to their system that fit their roster. But I think for D'Angelo, I think he just needs to slow down a little bit just in general and just kind of play his game. I mean, the guy we saw at Ohio State, the guy that, was, as he called himself, the best player in the draft, in his own words, he needs to get back to that guy. I'm not sure what's going on from that to this point, but he needs to get back to being able to play his game, be comfortable with the ball. But also, he does need the ball. There's too many guards on this team that need the basketball to be effective in their hands for more than 2 seconds. Like, there's too many guys that need the ball, dribble it, and do stuff with it. He needs to have the ball in his hands and make plays for other guys. And until that happens, it's going to be rough. You're going to see inconsistent results.
Yeah, there's no yes or no answer to this question. It's something in the middle. There's definitely going to be two sides to it. But let me get abstract for a second. There's essentially two coaches in this league right now that I can pinpoint that have been around for a while. They have a pedigree. It's George Karl and it's Byron Scott, and both are not having success right now. And it seems to me that neither have the respect of their players, and there's a reason for that, right? I mean, we always talk about how certain coaches are able to – certain coaches are player coaches. I don't think either one of these two guys are player coaches, and I think because of that, you've had turmoil within. Do you allow D'Angelo Russell to take the reins? Byron Scott has the mindset, and again, you got to remember the era that Byron Scott played in, and you have to remember the success that Byron Scott had from the early going in his career. Everywhere Byron Scott went, he had success for the most part in his playing days. And even as a coach, he went to the NBA Finals twice with New Jersey. Is it frustrating for D'Angelo Russell? I'm sure it is. How frustrating do you think it is for Byron Scott, a coach that I don't know that can necessarily adapt to this day and age, that can adapt to the changing of the guard in the NBA? How difficult do you think it is for him? It's probably extremely frustrating as well, yet he's a coach that seems like he's set in his ways. He's not going to give the keys to a 19-year-old kid. That's just the way it's going to be. I think eventually, through media pressure, through fan pressure, and maybe through front office pressure, you're going to see D'Angelo Russell with a more intricate role. We somewhat seen him in the fourth quarter against Orlando. So all in all, I think it's frustrating for both ends. I mean, you're looking at D'Angelo Russell, a guy who was star at Ohio State. Everything ran through him his 1 year at Ohio State. You got a guy like Byron Scott who has had pretty good success throughout his entire career as far as his association with the NBA goes, and now you're a bottom feeder. You're a coach of a horrible basketball team. I think it is a similar situation to George Karl. I see similarities in the way these two guys are running their team, and I see similarities between the way the players are responding off of these two teams.
You know, look, here's the thing. both of you guys know, and for the listeners out there, it's pretty evident. I'm about as old school as they come. So I understand that perspective, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here. But you know what? I'm sorry. The league is different now. The league is not the way it was, 3 years ago, let alone 13 years ago, you know, when Byron, you know, experienced some of his success, you know, or at least, you know, a great deal of his success. So, you know, that excuse, and I'm not saying you're making the excuse, Jordan, but if that, again, I'm playing devil's advocate, if that's the excuse that we're going to continue to go with, then I'm sorry, you need to go ahead and make a change, you know, sooner than later. And everybody knows.
Sorry to interrupt. It's definitely not an excuse. I'm saying I don't think it's possible for this guy to change and adjust. I really don't. Is it an excuse? No, I don't think it's necessarily an excuse. I think I'm calling as you were just referring to. You know, at what point do you call a spade? I think I'm calling that at this point. I don't know that he's capable of changing. I think he's proven that through the lack of analytics that we've had to hear about for the last couple of seasons, Jabari. I don't think he's capable of changing.
Well, no, I think, you know, when it comes to certain guys in this league, it's just to the point where they are who they are, and if you don't adjust to their style, you're not going to play a whole lot, or you're going to be seeing inconsistent minutes. And, you know, Byron's a guy that he's not going to change, for better or for worse, and that's a big problem. We have a young team. Because when you have a young team, you want to be working towards something. And if you're not able to adjust toward their skill set, because, all right, let's call it how it is. We don't need to know what Lou Williams and, you know, Roy Hibbert and Brandon Bass like to do, because they're not going to be here long term. Like, that's just not the, mm-hmm. you know, the core group of this team going forward. The key of this team is basically what do Jordan Clarkson, D'Angelo Russell, and Julius Randle do well on the court and maximize that? That's the key. And until Byron's able to do that, or whatever coach is able to do that, then there's going to be bad results. So, you know, whoever the coach is going to be, whether it's Byron, one of the assistants, or whomever else is going to be after this year, you got to figure it out, because at the end of the day, we have a young squad. You need to get – first, you need to have their confidence up. You can't do anything to mess their confidence or their psyche in their head. You can't do that. And also, you know what? Let them play to their strengths, because they only get better by playing to their strengths and doing what they do best, not trying to figure out some weird offense that very few teams run, or some weird situation that – doesn't really make any sense, because right now the offense doesn't make any sense. But when you have coaches from the old school era, it's their way or the highway, and they just don't change.
Yeah, well, it's a slippery slope, to say the least, and definitely a relationship that will kind of remain in the overall discussion throughout the year, and, you know, something that we'll keep an eye on. But I don't want to come down too hard on, you know, the coaching staff. You know, there's been a lot of that in the press. There's been a lot of that on Twitter. There's been a lot of that all over. You know, you can get that wherever you want. I will openly acknowledge that, you know, even discussing this is a frustrating experience, because, you know, look, you get down to the, like, oh, say for instance, I'm going to give an example. A few games ago, Byron came out and said, yeah, you know, I don't understand the ISO sets. You know, I don't like the ISO sets down the stretch. Well, you know, I was being kind of a smart aleck, but, you know, my biggest thing is, like, yeah, if only somebody could change that. I look at a team that doesn't have it. You know, they look, Byron's always been a defensive-oriented coach. They play no defense. They don't communicate. They don't defend the three-point line, and they don't defend at the rim outside of, you know, Roy Hibbert all that well. So if you don't have a defensive identity and your offense is continuing to just, you know, you're continuing to look either suspect or questionable, or simply, resorting to, you know, one-on-one ISO, one-pass possessions, I'm sorry. I just don't see it. I just don't. But, okay, we'll move forward. What about Randle's progress? I'm sure you guys have, noticed some of his production and even his level of aggression. You have seemed to wane a bit for a few games. Given some of his post-game comments and, you know, about how folks, you know, and he wasn't even being guarded in this, he basically said folks need to set aside their egos. He didn't name names, and that's an intriguing one in itself. I think it's fair to at least wonder if some of the turmoil and questions surrounding the team have kind of gotten under Randle's skin. He's still averaging about 12 points and actually leads the team in rebounding with 8.3 per contest. But talk to me about what you two are seeing from him.
Well, the one thing I see from Julius Randle is just a lot of versatility on the offensive end. He's able to bring the ball up. He's able to, you know, score from different areas on the court and also different angles. You know, he's a lefty, so he's always a little bit tricky. You know, he shoots at a different angle. He can, you know, do things when he's posting guys up or fading away. So his shot's a little different than most, but I've been impressed with the way he's been able to score. I've been impressed that way. My biggest thing with Julius Randle also is he's very confident on the court. He doesn't, you know, doesn't waver. He's going against a veteran guy. He doesn't waver. He goes against a bigger, taller guy. He's going to do what he does regardless. And He's going to take a strong to the rack, and that's the one thing I do like. And also, he's not a great defender at the moment, but he does provide effort on that end. He's not Ole defense. You know, he actually gives also an honest effort. He does need to get better. He can learn a couple things, but he's still in his first season. But he gives a good, honest effort. I do think he's a prototypical power forward for this new era. As long as his jumper improves, the sky's the limit for him.
What Jamison said at the end, you got to remember, he's only in his first season. And that's something that I think sometimes I even forget with Julius Randle. The thing that I'm most impressed with Julius Randle is the thing I got to go back to. We talked about this one of the very first episodes that we did. I'm impressed with the shape that he came into this season in. That right there tells you a lot about the individual and what type of player you're going to have. It would have been easy for Julius Randle. Expectations, I don't know, were especially high for Julius Randle coming into the season. Like, if we go back before the first time we've seen Julius Randle, you know, you were hoping that you would see this guy that you used the seventh overall pick on. You were hoping that you would see flashes of what you were hoping to, you know, to draft when you drafted this guy. I don't know that I necessarily – to me, he's almost already exceeded expectations based on the fact that it could have I don't want to use the word lame duck season, but he could have approached this season with a million excuses, and I'm not seeing that from Julius Randle. I've also believed that there have been several times this season where he stood up for himself against some pretty heavy superstars. You know, Kevin Garnett's situation is going to stand out to you. Julius Randle plays with confidence. Julius Randle's in great shape, and I remember what Kobe told him last season: if you screw this up, you are an idiot. And I believe that Julius Randle has taken that to heart. I don't think he's ever forgot that. And so not only have I been most impressed with the attitude and coming in shape, but just the confidence that he plays with on the court, that's a true positive.
Fully agreed. Look, I'm still extremely optimistic about Randle, and put simply, you know, obviously Jordan Clarkson has been great offensively, and, you know, he continues to make strides on the defensive end as well. But, you know, it's still at this stage in the season, Randle may, may be, or at least in my opinion, he's impressed me the most. Simply because I did not anticipate him being quite as versatile. His relationship with Russell, his relationship with some of the other guys on the team will be something that I definitely keep an eye on moving forward. But yeah, no, it's still some really positive signs out of him. Let's talk about another guy that I've seen, I don't want to say surprised by, but, let's just say pleasantly, it's been a pleasant development. Larry Nance Jr., I'm happy to see, that he's, carved out a niche for himself, or a slot for himself in the rotation. This is a guy that, we all kind of asked, hey, okay, what did they see in him to take him that early? Because quite frankly, prior to the draft process, most people had him as a second round guy, maybe even a late second round guy. And when the Lakers jumped up and took him, toward the end of the first, it was, it definitely made some waves. I think we now, can all see what they saw, but, talk about his, his motor skill, talk about it, his motor, his skills that are a little bit more refined than I quite anticipated, and some of the good things that he's doing out there for the Lakers.
Well, I love the pick because I actually got to see him play the last 4 years playing the Mountain West. I live in Vegas, so I cover, the Mountain West Conference, pretty much more than anyone else on Twitter that is a Laker fan. So that, to me, I thought it was a solid pick. I thought they probably would have got him at the 34th pick, but knowing what I know, his workouts were so good that teams were really thinking about trading up to go get him because his workouts were that good and his interviews were that good. But also, he's a guy that can play. I mean, he's a, he's a very hard worker, so that already put him ahead of a lot of other guys. Secondly is that he got better every year, and his athleticism, which even was slowed by an injury, it looks like he's getting it back because his junior year was a year he was really jumping out of the gym and doing some of the crazy stuff that he's doing now. But once he gets his jump shot together, if he can ever get that together solid, he will be a very solid rotation player for this team in this league because he can play. I mean, he can definitely play. His position defense needs work, but I like what I've seen thus far. He's a guy that they can use, a guy that can rebound and, play defense and, block shots and be active. He definitely has a spot in this league, but I'm not surprised at all. I love to pick at 27 because I actually saw him play. A lot of guys didn't see him play. They saw some highlights and whatnot. Wyoming's not a big school, so if you don't live in the Mountain West area, you really don't know a lot about him. But he was a really good pickup, and I'm really not surprised at all. He's a guy that a lot of teams in their earlier 20s were thinking about picking, but the Lakers actually got it right at this point.
Yeah, Larry Nance Jr. is the guy. It's funny you bring him up. Being in the Utah market, talked to a lot of Utah media members. I actually had a couple of people reach out to me this week and say, Larry Nance Jr., this guy's a real deal. Yeah, he's got athleticism like you really cannot believe. And again, Jameson was talking about playing in the Mountain West. Fortunately, being in Utah, I also got to watch Larry Nance play quite often throughout his college days. Here's the thing where the Lakers were sitting in the draft, and it's something to remember. There are some teams that will be drafting for need. When you're as bad as the Lakers were in the offseason, you don't necessarily have to draft for need. It wasn't a huge reach because at that point in time, you have to select either the most athletic or the best player available on your board. That's not always the case for some teams. If you've been around long enough, you understand that. Some teams have to draft for need. When you're as bad as the Lakers were, you don't necessarily have one gaping need. You have several. So it may seem like a reach to some people to grab somebody off your board that you deem is most athletic, maybe the most versatile, the best player available on your board. I give the Lakers props for taking him where they selected him, even though a lot of people looked at it a little bit funky. There was something that they seen in him, and it was an opportunity for them to select the best player on their board. They were in a unique situation at that point in time. You had two first-round draft picks. You knew you'd be selecting again relatively early in the second round. So grab your guy, grab him immediately, and that's what they did. I'm not shocked that Larry Nance Jr. has had some success and that he has turned a couple of heads, at least in this market, just getting some playing time. We know what he's capable of doing. Very athletic. Here's the thing about Larry Nance Jr., his rookie season. He may not put together sequences of plays, but he's going to put together a highlight or two, and that's what will turn heads in opposite markets because you don't have people in the East Coast. They're not staying up until 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning watching the Laker game. They're going to be watching highlights. And when you have a rookie that puts together a play or two that makes the highlight reel, that's when you start turning heads. So come midseason, people are going to take notice of Larry Nance Jr. He's not going to be rookie of the year by no means, but he's going to be one of those rookies that people look out and say, you know what, okay, maybe that pick wasn't as mind-boggling as I thought.
Fair enough. All right, last thing before we head into the break. Who's been the biggest surprise for you this season? For me, I'll go ahead and say, admittedly, it's Meta World Peace. Not because I didn't think he could, do anything out there. I thought they gave him, not necessarily an honorary position, but geared towards helping Randle and helping some of those young players. Did either of you see him actually, putting up numbers out there and contributing quite in the way that he has been?
No, definitely not. And also, he's one of the surprises, but I think Julius Randle, we knew he'd be solid. Mm-hmm. Like, we knew he'd be solid. He'd be pretty good. We didn't see this coming, though. We didn't see a guy that can do all the things he's been doing thus far this season, because on the offensive end, he looks like a guy that can do a lot of different things. You can put him in a lot of different roles, and in a more diverse offense, you can have him, set up in different areas of the court, and he can flourish at that point. So it's going to be interesting to see how he develops and also how he adjusts to the league. Because once the tape gets around after the first 20 games or so, teams are going to start playing him and defending him differently. So it's going to be interesting to see how he develops and how he changes his offensive game. But for the most part, Julius Randle is that guy I've been most surprised about.
Can't say I'm completely shocked about Meta, only because I followed Meta extremely close. I tell you what was interesting for me as far as Meta goes going into the season. I followed Meta pretty close when he was playing overseas. And on my own show, I think I even talked about this with Jameson once on my own show, where you look at where the rest of the country, the rest of the world is at in comparison to this country. Okay, people say, they use the term all the time. They talk about how the rest of the world is catching up with us. Yeah, countries running 12 guys deep are catching up with us. Countries as a whole are not even remotely near where we're sitting yet. And that's something that you have to remember when you watch the Olympics and you watch FIBA. You got countries taking 12 guys, and they're going up against 12 guys that aren't necessarily our 12 best guys. In that regard, yes, they are catching up with us. But Meta looked pretty good overseas. And so the biggest question mark for me was, okay, is that Meta doing, or is the competition that he's going up against just that bad? Because I think the two points that I just brought up, they can work hand-in-hand or they could work against each other. In this case, Meta has been pretty productive. I'm not going to say that I expected Meta to be as productive as he has, but I knew Meta still could play in the NBA based off of what I've seen from him overseas. The question was, is anyone going to take a risk on Meta? Even though he has behaved for the most part, Meta still has that mentality. Now he's that lovable guy. I hate making comparisons, cross perks references. It's more like Mike Tyson in a sense. You know what I mean? Like at one point in time, you looked at Mike Tyson, and a lot of people shook their heads. You look at Mike Tyson now, he's lovable. He's a lovable guy now. You know, you see him in movies. You see him on TV shows. And you like Mike Tyson. You view Mike Tyson differently today than you did 10, 15 years ago. And that is almost to that point. But there's still that baggage that comes along with him. So that was the question mark to me as to why, you know, could he come back? And if he was going to come back in the NBA, there was one obvious spot for him, and that was in Los Angeles. I can't say that is a huge surprise, although he's playing better than I think what a lot of people expected, definitely.
Absolutely. And so who's been your biggest surprise?
Oh, I don't know if I have any surprises on a 1-7 team. honestly, that's a tough one. Man, I you know what? This is a bad way to get out of this question. I don't necessarily have any surprises because I was somewhat optimistic going into the season. No surprises, a lot of disappointment. If I can't rule Meta as a surprise, maybe it's a surprise that D'Angelo Russell hasn't been more involved in the offense in the fourth quarter. Maybe that's my biggest surprise. Individually, I don't know that I have one. I'm sorry.
That's fair. All right, guys, let's go ahead and jump into this quick break because when we come back, we're going to be joined by Corey Hansford and Trevor Nathan.
The Lakers Nation podcast will be our weekly discussion where we provide analysis on the team, a behind-the-scenes look from both practice as well as the games, and we attempt to be the voice of Lakers Nation, which we all know is the greatest fan base in professional sports. So stick with us each week.
Welcome back to your Lakers Nation podcast. We appreciate you sticking with us through the break. As I mentioned, you know, heading in, you are now joined by LakersNation.com's Trevor Lane and Corey Hansford for this week's roundtable discussion. I'll turn it over to you, Corey.
All right. Well, I mean, I'd have to say one of the more pleasant surprises of the early season, since he's gotten into the rotation, has been the play of Larry Nance Jr., who was kind of a forgotten about rookie, especially during the preseason. So, my question and the roundtable question for this week was pretty simple. What do you think Larry Nance Jr.'s ceiling is as an NBA player?
Ceiling as an NBA player, you know, I've been really, really impressed with Nance and the way he plays. He's played with a lot of maturity, a lot more than you would expect out of a guy coming out of college. I mean, being a fourth year player certainly helps with that. But you know, he's got the athleticism. He's got a good mind for the game. And you got to love how quick his feet are defensively. He's really done a great job out there. And so, you know, I don't know if I see him as like a starter per se or anything like that, particularly when he's a four and the Lakers obviously have Julius Randle as their power forward of the future. But, you know, I could definitely see him as like a six man type of player. You know, he's the kind of guy that's going to get out there and get you hustle points. He's, you know, like they used to say about Sean Marion all the time. He's that guy that goes out there, you don't have to run a single play for him, and he still makes an impact. And I think every team needs a guy like that. So I'm absolutely thrilled with the way this pick has worked out, even though I was, you know, skeptical of it at first, like a lot of people were. I think he's shown flashes of some really great things. Obviously, his dunk in the preseason on Festus Ezeli was incredible. And yeah, I'm really optimistic about him, but I'm seeing him as more of like a six-man type guy off the bench, long-term than as a starter or even, you know, an all-star or anything like that. And that's not a bad thing. That's a very good thing for a guy that you're getting, you know, at the very end or the tail end of the first round.
Well, when I think of Larry Nance, when I think of his projected future, I think of a guy that starts with the league going to more of a small ball type of lineup. His importance will be there. I don't know if he's going to be a starter because he does have some limitations in his game, but he's also a guy that's going to be getting better each and every year. That's just who he has been since his freshman year of college. He's a guy that constantly improves, gets better and better, hardworking guy. And he's easier to coach than a lot of guys, so he's going to get better. But around 6'8", 6'9", he's not really a center. He's more of a power forward. With Julius Randle on the team, he's not going to be starting on this team. You can throw him as small ball center in some lineups against certain teams, but for the most part, you want to have him as a reserve guy, energy guy. You just got to hope he gets better so you can actually run plays for him because he's a very smart guy on the court. You know, his basketball intelligence is pretty up there, but that jumper needs work. We saw earlier this week a couple pick and pops, and the jumper was short. If he can get that jumper right, and it's going to take some work, if he can get that jumper on point, then we may have a player. But right now, he's just going to be a guy to come off the bench providing energy, but there is potential for him. I do think he could be a first pick off the bench for a good team later on down the road.
Just echoing what everybody else has said, it's always great to have a guy that you don't have to run plays for off, whether he's off your bench or in your lineup, in general, whether it's, Sean Marion or Cedric Ceballos-like player, that's just willing to do the dirty work, clean up around the basket, is able to knock down a jumper here and there. That's always going to be a plus. But the one thing I'll say is, even though, yes, of course, Julius Randle is a power forward, of the future, I can't necessarily say that he's not going to be a starter moving forward, because, look, I look at it like this. A guy like Josh McRoberts was a starter for several years at one point in this league. So, whether it ends up being with the Lakers, in a situation like Jameson mentioned, where they're playing small ball at different times, or with another team, I'm not gonna place a ton of expectations on him in the very early going, but kind of to each of your guys' points, there is some potential there. So I don't want to say the sky's the limit, but the jury is still out, and he has a lot more upside, or at least I'll speak for myself personally, he has even more upside than I initially thought that was there.
And I would agree with that. He definitely has more upside, and it's shown more early than I expected. Everyone knew about the athleticism and, the physical tools, but the basketball IQ, and even he's a little more skilled than I expected him to be this early. But the basketball IQ, especially on the defensive end, you very rarely see rookies, regardless of how many years in college, you don't see rookies have that knowledge of off-ball defense and help and recover and rotations. And I think the reason why we've seen the bench look so good in the last couple of games is in part due to his knowledge of that and being able to switch and help defenses a lot better, because he has a very good understanding of that, especially when compared to a Julius Randle or most of the other young guys on the Lakers, the Clarkson and Russells included. I think one of the better comparisons that I heard that I kind of liked was basically an athletic Nick Collison. And Nick Collison is someone who doesn't get a lot of, he's not a star. He's not some, big time major stats guy. But every time you look at the plus minus leaders in the year, he's somewhere in the top 10, top 5. And it's because he's always making an impact. He's very active and he does all of those little things, even if the stats don't always back up the impact that you're seeing. And that's someone who would have a very, very long career and someone who would be very, someone who it's beneficial to have around the team. And if if Lance turns out to be someone like that, a first big off the bench type of person, if you're getting that at the 27th pick in the draft, that's a huge get.
Absolutely. And you know what? That's a really interesting comparison. I hadn't heard that one, but I like that. I definitely like that because you do get the same type of motor, similarly refined skills, plus the tremendous upside of, the athleticism that, that Nance has, or I guess the athleticism advantage that Nance would have in that comparison. If he can continue to put it together, you're right. Positive things can certainly come for him. All right, I asked these guys earlier, and so I want their opinions on this. There's been much made of, D'Angelo Russell's, role and his playing time. We've talked a great deal about Julius Randle. What player or players have been the biggest surprises for you thus far? I know the record isn't great, through about 10 games or so, but just the same, has anybody stood out to you other than the guys that we've talked about?
Aside from Julius Randle sticking out, I mean, obviously Randle is the guy that really stands out. Just his athleticism, the way he's played and everything has been incredible. He's got to figure out how to play against longer defenders and everything, and you got to work on that jumper, but still, we got to be pleased with where he's at. But aside from him, the one guy that, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, but the guy that has really impressed me has been Nick Young. All summer, Nick Young was that guy that was the bad contract that the team couldn't move. I mean, if they wanted to free up more cap space, they couldn't find a taker for Nick Young. They gave him that long-term deal after his career year in a contract season, and it seemed like it was a mistake after the season that he had last year where he shot so poorly and he battled injuries the whole time. And over these first few games of the season, it's like Swaggy P is back. he's hitting all these incredible shots, and you know, it seems like he's playing within the flow of the offense, and he's really fitting in well with that second unit. He's providing that offensive punch that he's perfectly suited for, and you know, he's not an all-star. He's not going to be the lockdown defender. He's not going to get a bunch of assists, and he's not going to get a bunch of rebounds. But he can score the ball, and he can put points on the board with the best of them. And in that role, I think he's been really successful so far this season. And if you look at the advanced stats, they all put the analytics. They all put Nick Young as one of the top players on the Lakers so far. So I think we got to be pretty pleased with the way Nick Young has played at this point. And we got to hope that Swaggy P is here to stay, and that he doesn't revert to the shot clanking that we saw last season.
That's actually a really good point, Trevor. And you know what? He does deserve his props. To be quite frank, I was one of those individuals that was saying, like, yeah, they need to look to move him. I was one of the ones that was championing there's a little bit too much redundancy there with Lou Williams. But look, if Nick, you're right. If Nick Young is hitting his shot, he can that obviously is his best way to contribute. You're not going to get a lot of defense, as you mentioned. You're not going to get a lot of the other things. But when he's hitting his shot, when he's playing confidently, there's a significant difference out there. Sorry about that, Corey. What about your surprise player?
All good, and I definitely agree with the Nick Young thing. I think it's at some point it's even arguable that he's outplayed Kobe at times, which is kind of scary to think about. I have the same feeling, but about a different player who's impressed me the most that I never thought I'd say this again. But for me, it's been Meta World Peace. And, I mean, from someone who was kind of they're signing him in training camp to here's the last pick and he might or might not make the team, he starts off the season inactive. He can't get on he can't even suit up at the beginning of the season. And now he's, comes in and starts a couple games for Kobe, suddenly is shooting better than at any point I can remember within the last 5 years. I feel like Meta's made more threes in these first, few games of the year than he did almost his entire first Lakers run. I've never seen him this hot from deep. And his defense has remained, even though he doesn't have the foot speed anymore, his hands are so good that if he's still with you when you're trying to put a shot up, he's getting a hand on it. He's deflecting the passes. He's challenging shots. And he brings an attitude with him that anytime everyone else is with him on the court, you have to step it up because he's going so hard, 100%, that you look bad if you're not matching his intensity level and his energy. And when he comes in with the bench unit, which already has guys like Nance and Tariq Black and, more energy guys, it really rubs off on the rest of them. And for someone who I expected basically nothing from, I think Meta's been an absolute surprise and a very, very pleasant one at that so far this year.
You're preaching to the choir. Just before you guys were on, we were kind of echoing the same thoughts. The know-how is there. The knowledge, of course. I just didn't know that his body was going to permit him to do this. I think he's 35. His play has definitely been a positive development. All right, guys. Last thing I'll ask you before you go. What are your overall thoughts on the team at this point? I know the record stinks. We kind of all knew they were going to, record-wise, lower expectations heading in. But in terms of the overall, the actual progress of the young guys, of the core, I'm not necessarily interested in, of course, no disrespect and no slight to the veterans, but I'm really just, more concerned about the progress of the young guys at this point. What are your guys' feelings about that?
As was to be expected, it's been a roller coaster with the young guys. We see like Randall, he struggled against Chris Bosh, he struggled against Porzingis, struggled against the longer defenders, basically like Willie Cauley-Stein. But then he destroyed Dirk Nowitzki, at least on the offensive end. He didn't play such great defense on him, but he went right after Kenneth Faried, had a couple of just vicious dunks. And so you got to be pleased with that. As far as Clarkson goes, he's been doing a great job too. He's been pretty much right where we hoped he would be. He's getting into the lane and he's getting to the basket. He's still hitting the jumper out of the pick and roll, so you got to like that. Russell obviously has been a little bit slower to come along than we had hoped. And of course, there's been the issues with his playing time and everything. But still, at just 19 years old, we are seeing him improve every single game. He's getting more confident out there, more comfortable on the floor. And I think that as the season goes on, he's just going to get better and better. You know, people tend to forget that Jordan Clarkson last year basically didn't play until January. So it's going to take Russell a little bit of time for him to really, really adapt. So, you know, ideally, we would see seeing Russell tear up the league the way Towns is and the way Okafor is right now, the way they're putting up numbers. But I can't be too disappointed, I guess is my point. He's at 19 years old. He's going to have some growing pains, and I feel like he is going to get there. So add those big three on top of the pleasant surprise of how good Nance has been and everything. You know, I got to be fairly happy with the way the Lakers youth are playing right now, and I think there's still a very bright future ahead for them.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on that, for me personally, I mean, this is kind of what I expected. When you have a young team like this, it's not going to be the beginning of the season that's going to give you the hope. More often than not, it's going to be the end of the season. It's going to be the last 25, 30 games. That's what you're looking for, where you want to see the progression and where things are really going to pick up. And so right now, this is what you expect. We're getting flashes from these guys. We've seen Russell start to get a little bit more aggressive. We're seeing the improvement on Clarkson's jumper. And you know, Randall's going to work on, you know, his all-around game and his right hand and his jumper and, you know, the things that he needs to work on. To me, the most promising thing that I've seen, and not that I'm necessarily seeing, but that I'm also hearing, is the work ethic for these guys. And it's that Clarkson and Randall are constantly doing extra work with the coaches, and Russell is always putting up, you know, the jumpers and the extra work and everything that he needs to do. So for me, it's a matter of these guys, I have confidence that they're going to reach their potential because their work ethic is so good and all of them have shown themselves to put in all of the extra work in practice and you know, what's necessary for them to develop and to reach their potential. And that's the most important thing. As of right now, the wins they're going to be tough right now. A, because the Lakers are usually going to have lesser talent as a whole, and B, because these young guys simply don't know how to finish. But now isn't the time to worry about that. Now, we're 50, 60 games into the season, and the same thing is still happening. That would be more of a cause to worry. But at this point right now, the flashes, that's what we want to see. We want to see those moments where it show what they're capable of, and then it's just a matter of them being able to do it consistently, and that's going to come in time.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, good stuff. Each of you guys, why don't you share, you know, like we haven't done it in a while, why don't you share where the folks can find you on Twitter and let them know if you have anything, any new projects coming out.
Okay. You can find me on Twitter at Trevor_Lane. And you can find all my work on LakersNation.com. I do have a piece that is being published on Byron Scott and his relationship with D'Angelo Russell and you know, the intricacies of how all that's going to work out. And I am also doing vines on a game-by-game basis. I've got highlight vines being posted every night, every time the Lakers play. And so, yeah, I'm trying to bring all the action home to your computer that way. So, yeah, that's about it.
And I am at TheCoreyH on Twitter, at TheCoreyH. No immediate projects coming up this time, but I'll, you know, keep everyone posted on when something else would be coming up soon. I'm usually just tweeting out awesome and hilarious GIFs and memes on Twitter during Lakers games, so for just a fun follow and keeping up, you know, during the game to make you laugh during these tough times, you know, I'm the guy.
Well, there's certainly going to be a lot of tough times, so folks, make sure you, if you do that sort of thing on Twitter, make sure you follow each of these guys. As Corey mentioned, you know, he's going to keep it entertaining, but he's also providing great analysis. And obviously, Trevor, you know, whether it's the analysis he provides or the highlights or some of his great material, each of these guys are great follows. Thank you guys each again for joining. We'll have to do this again in another couple weeks. All right. Excellent stuff with those guys. Again, you want to make sure you follow both Corey and Trevor on Twitter. Make sure you check out LakersNation.com for each, for all of their material, as well as all of the other, talented writers and personalities. Before we run out of time, guys, let me go ahead and get your final shots. Jameson, why don't you lead us off?
Final shot is, when it comes to this team, you always want to keep out positives. I know we say this every week, but you want to take out positives. And also, you want to, guys like Larry Nance Jr. and guys like Anthony Brown and even stories like Metta World Peace, you want to, those are the stories you want to kind of look upon, because those are where it starts. When you have a young team with a young group of guys and a hardworking veteran like Metta World Peace, this is where, this is where when you look back for 3 or 4 years now, you can look back to this season and say, hey, I remember when these guys were playing, these young guys were playing and they were going through it. We saw these flashes, but now they're ready, So you just want to pay attention and see their development. That's going to be key. So I do believe D'Angelo Russell will be fine. I'm not worried about Julius Randle or Clarkson or any of those guys, but I do think your core guys, your core role players, we see how important role players are. We look at Golden State's roster right now. They have so many guys that can beat you, and they did a lot of it through the drafts. And getting a guy like Anthony Brown, like Larry Nance Jr., getting those guys, their development is key, just as key as Russell and Clarkson and Randle's.
Now, my final shot, I'm going to do a combination here. Dwayne Wade earlier in the week talked about Kobe and how there will never be another Kobe, and he considers Kobe to be the best player of this generation, and up until recently, when LeBron became the best player in the league, that was Kobe's throne. Definitely the utmost respect for somebody like Dwayne Wade. Likewise, when Dwayne Wade's career winds down, it's going to be very similar to the way we view Kobe, in a sense, to where I'm happy that I can say I was able to not only watch the NBA in his day and age, but also cover it. It was kind of lackluster earlier when we thought that maybe we would get to see Kobe and Dwayne Wade go at it one more time on the road, because throughout their careers, there's been some epic battles between the two. And to see Dwayne Wade actually give Kobe Bryant a nod and say, look, this is the best player of our generation, I don't think there's really player preference in this regard. I think there's no doubt about it. He is the best player of this generation. And for somebody like Dwayne Wade to step up and acknowledge that, to me, it brings up the fact again that the NBA is a true fraternity and these guys are extremely close. And, I just hope one more time, I want to see Dwayne Wade and Kobe Bryant go head-to-head one more time. We didn't get it when the Lakers traveled to Miami this last time. Hopefully we get it when Miami visits Staples Center, because I think everybody, NBA fan, Laker fan, Heat fan, or just a casual fan who watches the typical games that are on national TV, want to see that at least one more time. Kobe and Dwayne Wade go at it. A lot of mutual respect between the two. They played together in the Olympics. They've gone head-to-head in All-Star games and on the court in regular season games. I want to see it one more time.
Both of you guys make excellent points. Jordan, I'll speak on yours first. Look, for the listeners out there, it didn't sound just too negative earlier on. We basically were like, look, this is the Kobe that we're going to have, because again, like there may be those off chances or those nights where he can kind of conjure it up a little bit, or at least his body will permit him to. And I agree with you, Jordan. I hope to see those as well, whether it's with Dwayne Wade or with any of the other players that you can tell. I really appreciated playing against and competing against Kobe Bryant, for his entire career. And to Jameson's point, I know folks are probably tired of, patience, but really, look, the process, it may look ugly. The overall record guaranteed, it will look ugly. But, those of us that have been around, those of us that watched them rebuild after Magic, go through those lean years, go through the years of watching Nick Van Exel develop, watching Eddie Jones develop, watching an Eldon Campbell, watching some of those guys, and then obviously into the Shaq and Kobe years. And then even after Shaq left, there were some more lean years, not to remind you guys of some negative times, but it was ugly when Kobe was running around with Smush Parker and like Ira Neubel and all of those guys. I do understand it's a little bit different now because you don't have a guy that's in his, a superstar once in a generation type player in his exact prime. But more towards those years, like I mentioned earlier with Nick Van Exel and that core group, I do think that you have, as Jameson mentioned, five or six young guys that you can build around for the future. And I'm just excited to see that. So as always, we appreciate each of you for taking the time to tune in. We appreciate you sticking with us every, you know, each week. We're definitely grateful for the feedback we've been receiving via Twitter. Well, as always, I'm Jabari Davis, NBA. Jameson is The Jameson. That's T-H-E-E-J-A-M-I-E-S-O-N. Jordan is Jordan underscore DTS. So again, we appreciate all of the feedback. We appreciate, you know, all of the different, you know, Twitter topics that you guys come up with. We didn't necessarily get to one today. Of course, we'll bring that back next week. But, you know, stick with us here on your Lakers Nation podcast, and we'll continue to bring it.